Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's episode of the Thrive by Five podcast presented by Family Futures. I'm Corey, the communications manager and the host of this show, and I want to thank you so much for being here today with us. For February, we have Children's Dental Health Awareness Month. As we all know, starting your kid off right with a proper dental routine and keeping those things in mind as they grow up is important. So today on the show, we have a very special guest. I want to welcome to the show Dr. Megan McCone with Growing Smiles Pediatric Dentistry. Dr. Megan, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So thinking about early childhood dental health, obviously we don't see babies in dentist chairs, but thinking about these things as kids grow and develop is important because ultimately dental health is so important in the long run of things.
That's right. Yeah. We actually do see babies in dental chairs in the office.
Really?
Yeah, we see babies. I've seen babies as old as 3 days old, but typically we see them around age one. Yeah.
I think about my own son, and he was a late teether in life, and we'll talk about teething today as well. But I also think about he was a thumb sucker, so he got sick a lot more too, just because he was the kid who playing with everything, but then he would pop his thumb in his mouth and, okay, why is he sick? Well, and it just goes to prove really like how important your mouth is, and dental really, your overall mouth health is important just for the long-term sustainability of your life.
It's true. It's the oral health is a gateway to health in general. And so a common question we get in our office is, you know, why do we fix them? They're just baby teeth. You know, that's a very common question from parents, and it's mainly just from an educational standpoint. But there's obviously so many reasons why this introduction early on is so important for their longevity for them from a standpoint of oral health and the links, you know, to systemic health long term.
I love that. So thinking about kind of the first steps of dental health for a child, what I think of always first is teething, but is there something that precedes that in terms of dental health with children?
There really is. So there's a big word, like vertical transmission of bacteria, right? Okay. So that is, we aren't born with the bacteria that cause cavities. And the bacteria that cause cavities is transmitted to us through saliva, usually from our primary caregiver, the mother, the nanny, whoever's primarily taking care of the child at home. And so sharing saliva with spoons and straws, even before the baby even has teeth, that bacteria can be transmitted to the mouth early before we even have teeth in our mouth.
So I think about kind of that old thing I see with every parent where, you know, a kid gets a pacifier dirty and mom and dad like suck on it to clean it off and then put it back in the kid's mouth. So that's really...
Yeah, we say don't do that. We have like a passy wipe or go rinse it off underwater, put it back in the kiddo's mouth, especially when if the parent themselves has, you know, untreated dental health, because we as parents put ourselves last all the time.
Yes.
So we just recommend rinse it off under the water or have a little passy wipe or something like that and give it back to the child that way rather than popping it back in your own mouth first.
That is so interesting to me. That's a great starting point to think about. And then typically when it comes to teething, you know, kids are within that first year they're teething. I think about my own son. He actually was a late teether. He didn't start teething until about 9 or 10 months in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so when kids start teething, start showing that, how can parents start to help their kids with that next stage?
So let me just talk a little bit about teething if I can.
Sure.
First.
Yes.
So teething is a wide range. They can start right at birth. They can start 3 months after. I've had kids that are, you know, 18 months old and they still don't have teeth. So a lot of parents get worried if their kiddo isn't teething on time. But I just want to let parents know there's a wide range of what on time can be. We have like the norms and then there's this variation. So I wouldn't be alarmed, but if they're concerned, obviously they can check in with their dentist. Teething itself comes with a wide range of questions because every kid teethes differently as well. Every baby has different symptoms.
Yeah.
You know, the American Academy of Pediatrics says that all the teething symptoms of the runny nose and the diaper rash and all these different things aren't really associated with teething. They're more commonly associated with the germs that mm-hmm. the kids are picking up at the same time. But a common thing parents will go to when their kids are teething is baby Orajel. Put it on the gums, wipe it on the gums. And that's actually really kind of dangerous. The Orajel isn't great for kids to be absorbing all of that into their system. So we recommend not using baby Orajel on the gums. If the symptoms are really bad, The worst thing to do is just a little bit of like Tylenol or baby Motrin if they're over 6 months old. Yeah. If they're under 6 months, the American Academy of Pediatrics does not recommend those medications yet. Yeah. And then the bottle even says that. So like a cold washcloth or little teething toys for them to chew on is the best thing that you can do. You can even put them in the refrigerator. So they're a little cold, not the freezer. But those are some common things that we get questions about teething.
That's really, really interesting to think about too. Yeah, I think about with my son, and of course, I as parents, we always relate things back to our own children and our own experiences. But yeah, when he started teething, a lot of it was, teething ring, not rings, but what the teething mm-hmm. devices. He had a piece. It was a barbecue rib, like a teething toy.
Yeah,
and we put that in the fridge and get it cold. Or we'd even give him like things like frozen vegetables to chew on.
Yeah, exactly.
And that really worked out really well. In terms of teething rings, teething toys, is there anything that parents should gravitate more towards, and maybe like things they shouldn't let the kid, like is there a certain type of teething toy that they shouldn't let kids have? Or
I'm not certain about things they shouldn't let them have. I just know working with different like occupational therapists and myofunctional therapists, there's ones that are really recommended. So there's ones that are called P's and Q's, and they come in a set of a P and a Q together. And those are great for the kids to hold on to, but they're great for like oral function, for the kids to learn to manipulate their tongue. There's also something called a Nook stick. So it's N-U-K, and it has a little knobby end, and that's great for them to chew on. And the parents can use it, over in the cheek and in the tongue to help develop tongue function. So those are ones that are really great.
I think about when we were kids, because I'm assuming we're close in age, but we had the rings, like the little circular plastic mm-hmm. jelly things. So that's good to know. Now, one thing I want to talk about too is in line with what we've been talking about so far, but thumb sucking, because a lot of kids are. And I guess to an extension, pacifier as well, because kids do self-soothe with thumb sucking and sometimes pacifiers. So is there anything that parents should know about that regarding dental health?
Yes, definitely. So thumb sucking is something you can even see early on in ultrasound pictures. So if a baby loves their thumb, they're going to love their thumb. And it's unlike a pacifier, you can't take a thumb away. So with a pacifier, I'll start there. Around age 3 is when we recommend, AAPD recommends cessation of a pacifier habit or stopping the passy. So we usually are working with families in the office before 3 to get them ready for it. If a baby stops the passy sooner, that's great. Don't try to encourage giving it back, because the earlier that they stop the passy, the better. And the reasons why is we see changes in the way the mouth becomes shaped. The skeleton at that age is moldable like clay. Mm-hmm. So as they're sucking and the pressure from their cheeks is sucking on that passy, they're actually molding the shape of their upper jaw and lower teeth around the passy. So they can end up with what's called an open bite, and it can have dental crowding, which has implications later on their growth. And if they suck on that thumb or passy beyond age 3, like into age 4, that becomes more of a permanent change that needs to be fixed later on with orthodontics. If it stops around age 3, a lot of that change can happen and be reversed with the pressure of their tongue in their mouth. But with a thumb, you can't take it away. So what we do is we encourage parents to do with a thumb or a passy more positive reinforcement types of activities to discourage the thumb habit or the passy habit instead of punishment. We don't want the kids to ever feel punished or ashamed of it. And so reward charts, like sticker charts, every time we can try to go to bed without it, we can put a sticker on the chart. Or if we don't need to have it throughout the day, we can put a sticker on the chart. Different kinds of positive rewards and non-food rewards. We always recommend, stickers or other little trinkets, just not food rewards. We don't want to encourage that, with their diet and whatnot.
Sure.
With a thumb, it's always trickier because they turn 3 and they don't necessarily fully understand it yet. And they have it with them, and it's that self-soothing thing, and they can't take it away. So when kids are ready, there is a book. Oh gosh, I think it's called David Decides. It was something from like the 70s. It's like an old book where I think that David decides to stop sucking his thumb. So parents can check that out. But there's also, as kids get older and they start to go to kindergarten and they see like other kids aren't doing it, it starts to become more of an at-home thing, or they're doing it only at bedtime when they're tired. They might not realizing they're doing it. And so when the child themselves becomes aware and wanting to quit, then there's different avenues that we can work with the parents and the child on trying to quit. And it's different. You know, sometimes we'll say, like, wrap the elbow with an ACE bandage so they can't bend their arm to get it to their mouth. Or sometimes you can, and these are things that the child and the parent decide together what they would like to try, like tape the thumb and the index finger together at nighttime so that they can't, like, put it in their mouth the same way, or try to put a winter glove on. And if the kiddo really wants to get their thumb in the mouth, obviously they'll take the glove off. You know, I think on Amazon there's something called a T-guard. It has, mm-hmm. like a plastic guard for the thumb, and it has Velcro around the wrist so they can wear it at night. And there's all kinds of different devices like that, so we can try different things.
I think about, isn't there also like a solution or something you can put on the thumb? It like makes it taste bitter or something. Yeah, like that.
Yeah, Malvala Stop. It's like a nail polish that tastes really bitter. My daughter she's going to be 6 soon, and she has a nail biting habit. And so she really wants to stop biting her nails. So I said, if you really want to, we can get this nail polish to stop. So you can use it for other things too.
And you talk about the activity chart and the sticker chart, and I can't tell you how many times a sticker chart has saved my life, whether it's thumb sucking, whether it's potty training, whether it's any sort of thing. Kids love stickers, and my son, we did definitely incentivize him when he was thumb sucking because he did it very much self-soothing, and even into, I think, preschool, he was still kind of doing it. But I think once he saw other kids stopping that. Inversely, I'm married to an educator, and she's told me stories too about older kids even still sucking their thumbs. And it's very interesting, I mean, how that process works. You talked earlier about how when the kids are sucking their thumb, and they can kind of reshape their skull and their jaw and everything. One thing I wonder is how genetics play, because I know, for example, I hate to smile too much with my teeth because I have bad teeth, but or not great teeth, I should say. I'm going to recut that because I don't want to sound terrible.
I think you have a great smile.
Thank you. But yeah, so I think about myself and my teeth and how sometimes I feel insecure about my smile. And my parents had not great teeth. Inversely, my wife's family has like straight teeth, no end. So sometimes genetics probably plays a part as well with teeth and for children.
They do. Genetics play a big role. So one of the questions I ask on, we do infant oral health exams, so the age one visit, and I'll always ask the parents, any concerns you have for your child's health? And then the other question I ask is any family history of any dental issues, missing teeth, crowded teeth. They do play a role, especially when we have families that have different kinds of jaw discrepancies or tooth size discrepancies. Those do go down in generations and pass on to the next generation as well.
Okay, that's great to know. One thing in the same ballpark we should talk about is bottles and bottle decay, which is something I learned about this week, actually, in preparing for this interview. So I know, because obviously there's a certain point into which they say, you know, bottle feeding should still keep going, but there's also this fine line of when bottles become not hazardous, but detrimental maybe to dental health. Where is that point, do you think?
Yeah. So going again off the American Academy of Pediatrics, they do recommend like milk only, until, you know, the baby can start taking bites of different foods. I think it's around age 6 months, but they do recommend having still milk in the bottle until about age one and then transitioning away from the bottle. And that's beneficial also for that oral development, like a thumb or a passy from that standpoint. But when you're asking about like bottle decay, so nursing decay or bottle decay, they kind of go along with just the term early childhood cavities, early mm-hmm. childhood caries. It's a concern mainly when nursing or bottle feeding is on demand. And so that's anytime the baby wants to have a drink, they can just have a drink. And so the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends better to try to get the baby on like a feeding schedule. And if they are even on demand feeders, because whatever works for a mom and baby, it works. Yeah. You know, you got to do what you have to do to survive in those early stages. We get that. And so what we recommend to families too is making sure that once we add substrate, so once we add different foods and things like that in, we definitely, as soon as the baby has teeth, we have to be brushing the teeth. And the American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry recommends as soon as the first tooth comes in using a toothpaste that has some fluoride on it. So when the enamel first erupts, when the first teeth first erupt into the mouth, the enamel isn't actually all the way mature yet.
Oh, okay.
It's when it's the most susceptible to the bacteria. So if the baby already was inoculated with bacteria in the saliva, and then their teeth come in, and then if they're not getting brushed to remove anything off of them, or they're not getting exposed to fluoride, that's when that enamel is actually most susceptible to decay. And when it can start to go rampant in the mouth and get really bad really fast, because the enamel is not even mature enough to combat it. And their saliva isn't mature with all the buffering capacity like we have yet to combat that bacteria as well. So early on, brushing as soon as the tooth first come in, using a little smear like the size of a grain of rice with amount of fluoride toothpaste, and then wiping it off. And for the babies that do feed on demand, if the parents have like Spiffy wipes or Dr. Brown's wipes, they have some xylitol in them.
Okay.
They can wipe those off. If it's the middle of the night, they're not going to realistically get up and go to the bathroom and brush every time. But if mom has a thing of those wipes by, you know, wherever she's nursing or wherever the bottle is being fed, to wipe off the teeth at least, or even a little washcloth to wipe the teeth off before they lay the baby back down. Because we hear they're going back to sleep without that substrate on their teeth.
Okay, so let me start over. So eventually we get to the point where children are in an age where they can start visiting you. What is the typical age in which kids most commonly start visiting the dentist?
Yeah, so we recommend 6 months after the first tooth comes in, or age one, whichever comes first. So their first birthday is when it's a good time to establish a dental home. And that's beneficial for the family, like a well child visit at the pediatrician, just to get that baseline, you know, early education on how to take care of those new teeth. We give anticipatory guidance, which is like helping them understand, like, even just baby-proofing the home, like if babies are crawling around and there's a cord, you know, we see things like electrical burns, which are so sad, you know. So just as important as it is for a well child infant exam at the pediatrician, it's kind of that first step at the dentist. That visit, we're going over education on how to take care of the teeth, as well as just answering any questions the parents might have. And for the baby, it's that first step establishing like what it means to go to the dentist. And every 6 months when they get exposed to that, it starts to build that understanding of what it means to go. And at first, the baby's going to cry. It's totally normal. We tell the parents, like, when they're crying, their mouth is open and we can see everything. But it's still normal at that age to cry developmentally. And as they get going and as they get coming to see us, usually by age three, there's no more tears and they're ready to sit in the chair by themselves and have that dental confidence.
So thinking, and I know you brought a bunch of great of displays here for us. It looks so fancy. But thinking about the early dental care for children, especially after that first visit, what kind, do you have things here that you might recommend for parents to start using for their kids yet?
So initially, like we mentioned, like starting with the fluoride toothpaste. So we have both Crest and Colgate here. Those are the two that ADA recommends. But at home, we use, I think we use the Burt's Bees brand because it's dye-free. So some parents are looking for ones without dyes. And we do have families that come to the office that don't want to use fluoride. So we do have some fluoride-free alternatives that are like a hydroxyapatite toothpaste that are out there. There's ones that have xylitol in them. We have one at the office that has calcium and phosphate as alternative minerals. But we do recommend the fluoride as the best mineral to reuptake into enamel to remineralize, you know, tooth decay.
And yeah, let's take a second to talk about fluoride too, because I know fluoride is a very divisive thing. Obviously, I would assume as a dentist, you probably advocate more for fluoride because of that. But yeah, what's the big argument right now with fluoride for parents who might not know?
Yeah, so it's a big, obviously, controversial topic. It's been controversial for a very long time. So the controversy surrounds fluoride is it's, you know, considered can be a neurotoxin. I think that's the thing we hear a lot on headlines. And of course, when you hear things in social media or certain research articles, it can be taken one line out of context and blown up, depending on which side of the fence you're on. Of course, as a dentist, I do advocate for fluoride. My kids use it. I prescribe it. I wouldn't recommend something that I feel like is unsafe. But I'll also just say that anything in large amounts can be unsafe. You know, if you drink too much milk, that can be bad for you. If you drink too much water, that can be bad for you. So when we use fluoride, whether it's in drinking water, it's at the optimized levels that have been shown to help decay without causing systemic harm. When we use the fluoride in the recommended amounts, that little pea-sized amount for a 2 to 5 year old, or the rice-sized amount for an infant up to age two, those are amounts that have been like studied and shown to benefit the teeth and remineralize the enamel, prevent the decay and make the tooth a little bit stronger without causing harmful systemic effects long term. And so, you know, it continues to be researched, continues to be shown in the ADA, AAPD. They still all recommend the fluoride. We're still recommending it as well, just in the safe doses. And obviously with all of these, especially in the age group that you guys are 0 to 5, all toothbrushing should be supervised. All toothpaste should be kept up out of the kids' reach. So parents should be making sure their kids aren't putting a big glob of toothpaste on and sucking it off. You know, we want to make sure it's being supervised.
And that's a good thing to talk about too, as well. Just helping kids with proper brushing and flossing techniques. I don't know if they're flossing at that point, at that young of an age, are they?
So we do recommend flossing as soon as the first teeth are touching. Okay. So they can always introduce flossing earlier as practice. So these little flossers that I brought, like, we recommend parents use these early, and they can rinse them off or wipe them off between teeth so they're not just moving plaque around the mouth. They just make it easier to get into a little kid's mouth than the big string of floss. But a very common reason we see cavities is usually starting in the back molar teeth, because a lot of parents didn't know they should be flossing the baby teeth. So as soon as those teeth are touching, that's when they should be flossed.
Very good. And so just thinking about flossing, brushing, I know there's lots of different things people can do. I know some toothbrushes even have little timers like that. It plays music until it's time to stop, or there's apps. Or do you have personal things that you recommend for people to help their kids get in that habit of proper technique?
Yeah. So initially, the very early ages, you know, the AAPD recommends 2 minutes, 2 times a day. If you can meet any parent who can take a 2-year-old and have them brush for 2 minutes, I will give them an award, because I don't think any 2-year-old would brush for 2 minutes. My son is 3 and we get, you know, 30 seconds to a minute tops. But for the early age groups, you know, the 0 to 2, the biggest thing is just making sure the teeth are clean. And so for the parents of that age group, your kids want to see you. They want to see your face. They like singing songs. And so in that age group, just making it really fun. And so my son is in the age group. We just keep it really fun and silly. And I make up silly songs or silly games every time we're going to brush his teeth, just to keep it interesting. So we talk about sugar bugs, and I'll start brushing one side and say, hey, there's a purple sugar bug over there. We got to get it. Open up big so we can get it. And the other day we were brushing Batman circles around the city looking for criminals in his mouth. So you just silly things at that age. When they get a little bit older, there are the toothbrushes with the timers and the apps. You know, we brought a Sonicare toothbrush. It goes for 2 minutes. There's an app that goes along with it. And so we recommend the parents definitely help brush until the kids can tie their own shoes, which ends up being around 6 or 7 typically. And so the parents should be helping supervise through that whole age group.
I also noticed too, sometimes when, at the end of the day and you're brushing your teeth and you brush as a family, you know, it's okay, I'm going to brush my teeth with you as well. So that way the kid doesn't feel like they're being, why is it mom and dad? Why is my older sibling not having to brush their teeth right now?
Exactly. Just that role modeling, kind of doing it all together as a family, is great.
I love that so much. And then, so we talked earlier about how some kids cry in the dentist chair. There's any sort of reason, kids can have anxiety about the dentist office. Some kids are neurodivergent, and there's lots of things like that. So thinking about how we can help our kids prepare for the dentist chair and that experience, some kids might feel nervous, might feel anxious. How do you, as a dentist, help reassure them? And how can parents help their kids prepare for that experience?
Yeah. So before they come, a good way to do it at home is to even just practice and be playful about it at home. Hey, we're going to play dentist today. Why don't you lay down in the chair? If they have a recliner or a couch, just lay down, and the parent can use the toothbrush to say, okay, the dentist is going to count your teeth just like this, open wide, and do counting if they would like to. I think the dollar store sells a little plastic mirror, mm-hmm. so they can actually play like that. And, you know, the dentist is going to do counting. And the more trust before the appointment that the parent can convey, the kid is going to come in with trust as well. Where we see a lot of kids coming in with anxiety, there's 3 reasons kids are afraid to go to the dentist. Is like fear of the known, if they've already had a bad experience somewhere and they're coming in. Fear of the unknown, where they just aren't sure what's going to happen. So talking about it in like kid friendly terms ahead of time, like the Daniel Tiger books, or the, yes. I think it's an episode of Daniel Tiger about yeah. it, those kinds of things. And then fear of the perceived known is like they never went to the dentist, but they have a cousin who went and the cousin told them how awful it was. And so they come in expecting the worst. So the more trust the parents can convey ahead of time, like, oh, we trust Dr. Megan. She's going to take great care of you when you get there. And so if the parents can be kind of calm and comfortable about it, we have a lot of adults who are scared to go to the dentist. And a lot of times unknowingly, as parents, kids look to us and they can sense our fear and our anxiety. And so if they sense mom is anxious, they're going to come in going, I'm nervous. I don't know why, but my mom is nervous. So I'm nervous too. So as a parent, if we can ease our own anxieties a little bit or not show it to our kids when we're going into those experiences, our kids will go in with a sense of calm too.
I remember hearing a family story. One of my relatives was talking about their dental experience. And when they were younger, they didn't want to go because their choices for doctors were Dr. Payne and Dr. Scary.
Yep.
And I think to myself, wow, if you have a name like that, you might want to, I applaud going into dentistry, but yeah, I mean, so there's things like that. And I think parents too, they have a shame because parents feel like, oh, I should have better dental health. And then they get, so then even their anxiety about being in the dentist office can project another child as well.
Yeah. We tell parents when they come in, we have parent guilt all the time for things. And especially if we come in and we know our kid has a cavity, you know, there's a lot of parent guilt involved with that. And so we as parents do and say, hey, you're here. You did the right thing bringing them in. We look forward, not backwards. We're here to help solve that issue and help you get things fixed up and head in the right direction. And so like for parents that are listening, if they're bringing their kid into the dentist, that's the best thing you can do to let us help. Like that's what we're there for, to help get it going on the right track.
And that's so true. Yeah. It's cast aside the shame. The fact that you're in the office, in the dentist chair, means you're making the right choice.
Exactly.
It's like going to the gym. Like, you know, you can feel bad if you're not, don't have the physique you want yet, but the fact that you're there putting the effort in is more valuable ultimately. Exactly. Thinking about, what's the word? Okay. Hang on, Delise. Thinking about, diet and, how that works. I know that the dentist will always say, you know, no sugary drinks, no this, no that, which I think is important. But I also know that a lot of people kids still have candy, kids still have treats. Mom and dad might still take them to McDonald's sometimes for dinner instead of making a meal at home, which is totally fine. So I guess the question is, how do you help reassure the balance between those sugars and those sweets and healthy eating when it comes to talking to parents and talking to kids?
Yes. So first, I ease the parents and say, hey, I like candy and I took my kids to McDonald's last week. It happens, you know, we're yeah. parents. It's real. So the balance comes in the fact that like those things can be once in a while treats instead of the regular and the norm in the house. So the candy or the sweets, I tell parents, like, just try not to have them in the house as a regular thing, because if you have them, the kids will find them. They know they're there. They're going to beg you for them until you give in and give it to them. So if they go to a birthday party and they get candy or they get a juice box or it's Halloween and they go trick-or-treating, we're not going to deny them of those fun experiences. And I always tell kids when they're in my chair right before Halloween, it means we get to brush twice that night because we're getting all that special candy. So as far as the diet goes, we do recommend to parents to try to do kind of like the milk schedule, like 3 meals and 2 snacks a day. So every time we take a bite of something that has a carbohydrate or a sugar in it, so a juice or anything like a cracker has carbohydrates, it makes the pH of our saliva dip to an acidic level. Yeah. And that's actually when the enamel can change to start getting a cavity. And so if we're snacking all day long, we're keeping that pH of our mouth into that acidic range all day long. So if we can limit it to the 3 meals and 2 snacks as best as we can, it gives our mouth time to neutralize in between. And so I tell parents, make the snack times, like try to keep the carbohydrates more at the meals. And in the snack times, do like cheese, yogurt, your veggies, like at the snack times, just to give the mouth more of a break. And again, those AAP, you know, recommends there's really not a whole need for fruit juices, like actually eat real fruit and mainly have like water or plain milk instead of all the flavored things. And if they're going to have the special juice or drink box, just make it a once in a while special drink.
My child is 7.5. He's very adamant, 7.5. But I find too that even after he has dinner, he'll say, can I have a treat now? Can I have, you know, and he is good at asking about that stuff, but we remind him too. We say, you know, well, you just brushed your teeth. So, you know, if you have another snack or a treat, you're first off, it's going to taste like toothpaste,
yep.
But also you're going to have to brush your teeth again. And usually that can help, wear him down with that process as well. One thing that I don't think is commonly happening, or maybe it's more common than I realize, but it's when kids chip or knock out a tooth. What's the concern there? I know, for example, my son, he has one of his teeth right now. He bumped his mouth years ago, and the tooth is a little discolored, but it's a baby tooth. So it's going to fall out eventually. Dentist says, don't worry about it. You know, if it becomes painful, then have concerns. But how often do you see where kids are chipping or knocking out teeth?
Yeah, we see dental trauma all the time. Like every week we see dental trauma in the office, and it can be on a baby tooth or on a grown-up tooth. So every trauma has kind of a varying degree of both urgency and what do we need to do to fix it. So we definitely want to usually see the kid, take an exam, decide if we need to take an x-ray of it, because sometimes it can be a root fracture. There could be a bigger issue going on. And in the case of like a discolored tooth with an x-ray, as long as it doesn't look infected, we just monitor it. If it's a baby tooth that falls out, we do not recommend putting it back in, because there's a grown-up tooth underneath. We don't want to damage it. But if it's an adult tooth that falls out, we want to try to get that tooth back in as soon as we can in the right way. So if there is like a dental emergency, a call to the dentist emergency line is really important, because we can walk you through, if you're at home, what to do and get you to the office right away if needed. And so most dental offices have an emergency line. And in Grand Rapids, we have a nice like call group that we have going on with a lot of local pediatric dentists. So there's always someone to help the parents out if they need to.
That's great. Thinking about, I'm touching back on something we talked about earlier, but those initial first appointments when it comes to what parents can help their kids expect when they get that initial, there might be x-rays, there's usually like a cleaning. What sort of procedures are happening with those first dental visits?
Yeah, so on a baby, it's more that knee-to-knee exam and education, but as they get older, if they're, you know, a little bit older where their teeth might be touching, their first visit, they're going to meet the hygienist and kind of come back and get acclimated to the dental chair. All of our team, you mentioned about being neurodivergent with some children. So our whole team is really educated on how to make each visit individualized for the child and their own unique needs. So they meet the child where the child is at. So starting from when they're in the family room, getting down at their level, knowing if the child needs us to be a little more boisterous and fun, or if the child needs us to be a little more quiet and reserved, depending on their level of shyness. When they come back to the chair, we usually show them the toy box, and that gets kids excited for what they get to do at the end when we get through everything. We do an exam, check all of the teeth out, decide if there's any x-rays needed, and then, you know, take any needed x-rays, polish the teeth, and they'll meet the dentist. The dentist will do, you know, the full exam as well. And at the end, we do a lot of education with the child and the family. Sometimes we use a disclosing solution where we actually stain the plaque and show the kiddo the areas that they can see the plaque where they need to brush better. And at the end, obviously, they get to have their prize and go. And most kids, a lot of kids at the office, look forward to being able to come back just for the prize alone. So that's what I remember about going to the dentist growing up.
The prizes and then the TV.
TV.
Yes. Yep.
We have a TV on the ceiling.
Kids watch cartoons and, you know, they work on your teeth. And I think the only thing that I think about that my son still struggles with a little bit is x-rays. Because you got to bite that plastic piece,
yep.
And kind of chokes you a little bit. And
they're not fun. I always, when I see the kiddos at the chair, I'm like, were they easy or were they tricky? And most kids say they're tricky, but we always give them a high five and say, hey, you can do hard things, you know.
That's so great. Well, this has been awesome so far, but let's talk about Growing Smiles Pediatric Dentistry a bit, because this is your practice that you started, and you were telling me the kind of the story about how it happened, and I want our guests to hear it as well. So please, please kind of retell that story for me.
Yeah. So I founded Growing Smiles back in 2013, having just left dental school. I never really knew that owning my own practice was going to be my next step. I thought I'd go out into the real world and get a big girl job. And little did I know my first big girl job was going to be owning my own practice. So it took about 2 months for us to renovate a space. And we started off with two employees, one dental assistant and one person who worked at the front desk for me. And it's been 11 years later. Now we have two other dentists that work with us, and our team is 31 teammates. And All of them are trained still by me. We do a lot of one-on-one culture training and education so they can know how we want to deliver the experience for the kids and the families. And we want, when people come into the office, for them to really feel welcome and at home and comfortable. We know that going to the dentist can be scary. So that was my number one mission, because my mom is a severe dental phobic. She would not go to the dentist when I was in dental school. She finally came and came in tears. And so it was because of things that happened when she was a child at the dentist. And so I said, I want to be the office that doesn't traumatize kids. We want to have good experiences. So in our office, we do sedation dentistry as an option when kids really can't get it done any other way, when we've tried everything else. We have sensory options for rooms when kids need a quieter space. We can dim the lights and make the ceiling starry. And we have little, you know, Z-Vibe sensory toys and things like that for the kids that need a little bit extra. And just a quieter space. So we try to make everything really comfortable for the kids and the family.
That's so great. And I was about to ask you, like, what got you into dentistry, and assuming like your mom just trying to like help her and everything probably was part of it as well.
That's right. Yeah.
Cause dentistry, I know that it gets a bad rap, unfortunately, because people don't like going to the dentist. So this is great. One question I know our families, ask is, they're always looking for places that accept Medicaid. Is your office a Medicaid, office?
We do. Yeah. The Medicaid dental insurance is Healthy Kids Dental. Yep. And so we do accept that at our office.
That's great. Are you taking new patients? If people we have are looking for a new dentist by chance?
We are. Yeah, we are accepting new patients.
Awesome. That's wonderful. Well, Dr. Megan, thank you so much for being here today. It's been so much fun to talk to you and get to know more about dental development for children. The dental experience and all these great things. And of course, we'll leave your information inside the episode description, and then so people can check you out if they need a new dentist.
Thanks, Corey.